This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Hope you guys are having a good start to your Wednesday. Reminder, tomorrow, opening day, Royals baseball right here. We do have stadium news. We'll be broadcasting live from Kauffman Stadium tomorrow outside Gate D.
That's all the news I got.
That's the only stadium news we have for you today.
Although we will talk stadium here coming up in a little bit based on Mayor Q's comments yesterday and what continues to be the rumor mill that is the Royals baseball situation. Once again, the Chiefs just laying the weeds, saying jack, doing nothing, kicking it on the side while the Royals have to be at the front of the class. Now, in fairness, they want to get out of their building faster, and they really just want a new building no matter the circumstances. They're not interested in my opinion, renovating Kauffman. They got a bad batch.
They've been clear.
No concrete.
They've been clear about that. They've been clear about that. At 1:50 today, John Sherman will speak. That'll be live here during the show. So if you're wanting to hear from the owner of the Royals, I'm sure not only will be asked about this year's team and expectations, but I can promise you he will be asked, of course, about the latest reports and rumors and everything of the week.
100% likelihood. So, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get a definitive answer at 1:50, but we will carry that live for you here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. Let's start with the Royals because I'm curious. You guys can text it on this as well. 913-586-7965.
Oh, I love the answers to this. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has their bold feeling about this team. Good or bad, bold feeling, whether it's a player, whether it's how the team's going to perform, anything. Give me your boldest take because I have mine for you. And it involves one of the newer members of the Royals here in 2025.
Okay.
All right.
There's several new members. India?
This is bold, but I don't think it's crazy. I'll let you guys be the judge, I guess, of that. Carlos Estevez will have a career high in saves and be an all-star. And on the surface, you're like, oh, what? Okay.
What's his career high in saves before?
Career high is 31 saves, so 32 is not an insane number.
And it all,
he,
a good number,
when he had 31, by the way, he was an all-star that year for the Philadelphia Phillies, I believe it was. Phillies, I think it was. So 50% walk rate was cut down. His walk rate was cut down by 50% last year. So that's a huge, huge swing for a player. He's in his 30s, but he's not 38 years old. He's going to be on a team that I think will have the starting pitching to put him in position for a lot of save opportunities.
Yeah,
there should
be some good save win opportunities.
I know Lucas Ursig is around, but I think they're going to use him in more of a like put out the fire role than a save role. Doesn't mean Ursig won't get saved this year. I also know Estevez is getting the first opportunity to be the closer beginning tomorrow against the Guardians on opening day. So that's kind of my, I don't know if it's a hot take. It's definitely, I think my bold take of the season is Carlos Estevez will have a career high in saves and be an all-star for the Royals.
I think that's what makes it fun. I don't care if you want to call it a hot or bold take. We just want the biggest opinion you have on the Royals this year that you genuinely believe. Look, I considered some others. did I consider like Jack Caglione to be called up by July 1st? Sure, I wanted to say that, but I don't know that I believe it enough, right? I don't know if I believe it with my gut that that's going to be the case. My big take this year is that Michael Massey is getting ready to hit 25 home runs, and that will be way more at second base than we would have thought a month ago. I think when all this shook out and they were looking at him at left, looking at Indy at left, moving the positions around, I think the actual way it's shaken out now is Michael Massey is the almost everyday second baseman. Jonathan India is the almost everyday third baseman, even though he hasn't played third base a single day in the big leagues because he was blocked in Cincinnati. He played short and third in college. Mm-hmm. He can play third base. He's played more third in his career than Michael Massey. And Michael Massey was a Gold Glove finalist at second base. I mean, he's a guy who can play that position defensively. And I think between that and a few innings in left, not zero, a few innings in left, Massey's going to stay healthy this year. And I think his power potential has always been there. I think Michael Massey's hitting 25 homers. I'm not going to say
25 homers. Yeah.
That's a lot of homers.
A huge boost to this lineup. If all of a sudden they got that kind of production, I'm with you that as far as second base goes, that's going to be the position that he has a chance to get a little bit of a stranglehold on, because I do think Jonathan India has been impressive in spring by all accounts, from talking with Vern, from talking to other people that are out there. We've had Vern on throughout spring training, and he acknowledged Jonathan India at third base looks pretty darn impressive. And so if that's really the case, could that end up being an upgrade at third base defensively to go with the offense that we're all expecting?
Would be. I mean, Michael Garcia was a pretty good third baseman.
Sure.
But I think it doesn't hurt you in that spot.
913-586-7965. You're good, man. You're good. Allergies and stuff, whatever it may be, it gets to everybody.
It's just like a slight cold, and now I got that, like, you know, that tickle where you're just I don't want to cough every time I try to say five words into the microphone. Yeah. Please, go ahead.
No, you're good. What is yours, Drew? So Cody's going with Massey, second base majority of the season, 25 homers. I'm going with Carlos Estevez.
I don't even know if this is a
career high in saves in an all-star appearance. What about you?
I don't know if this is a bold take or not, but I'm going to say Q wins manager of the year. I know he was close last year.
Really tough this year.
He probably got screwed out of it actually last year.
Yeah, last year was his best shot. I think what's the criteria? How do you see him getting there?
I believe, if I remember correctly, the Brewers manager, I forget his name,
There's no reason to know the Brewers manager.
Nobody knows his name.
I believe the Brewers manager won last year, correct, for the NL.
For the NL. And the AL was the Guardians.
Which I still think is nonsense because they were a 91 team the year before.
I think that exactly actually might be the reason why he might win it, is because the argument against it was, well, the Guardians were good before he was anyways, where I think if you put back-to-back seasons of 85 plus 87 plus 90 plus win season, if you go back to back with, if they win the division and let's say they get to 91 wins, I think he should be your manager of the year for taking the Royals to back to back postseasons, for winning the division and upping the ante. I think the reason they gave it to vote last year was because they were just as good as they were the year before with him being the manager. Why can't Q win it for going back to back years? Even though he was the manager last year, I think it's more impressive.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hot take. It would, in my opinion,
I don't know if it's hot enough to be considered a hot take.
No, these are just bold takes. Sure. We'll read some from the text line as well. Bold takes. I think that's fairly bold because it definitively requires him to win a division. We agree, right? They have to win the division for that.
Because I don't even know that, like, 90 wins and second place in the AL Central necessarily gets it done, unless it's this like goulash, as we've said before, of AL teams in which nobody stood out. Maybe
he, I think, would have to win the division, and even then, it depends what happened in another division. Did some other team have a surprise year, Drew, in another division? You know, hell, if the Boston Red Sox won the AL East, I could see the Alex Cora, right?
Yeah,
that's over there.
I think so.
He would probably be even manager of the year, considering just the bounce back for that franchise.
And the way people still view it, right?
So that's tough, but that's why they're bold takes. Here's a couple other ones from the text line. 913-586-7965. Someone says that the Royals win 95 games and the division, and Bobby wins MVP. So coupled with the two, look, that's correlation. We call that correlation. You know, Bobby wins MVP, the chances of the 95 wins, the Royals winning 95 games in the division probably does mean Bobby is MVP. So the correlation works.
Yeah. Those two actually do kind of line up pretty good. Someone says Jonathan India to lead the league in runs scored.
Ooh.
Told us last week it was plus 20,000 down to plus 10,000.
You did
now.
Texter. I remember that.
I'll give him credit. Mm-hmm. The odds have been cut in half.
They are. We looked it up. I remember that convo we had, and it is the same texter. And the issue we found was to lead the majors. Shohei Ohtani last year had like 40 or 50 more than everybody else. It was something like that. And that was the problem.
But we talk about like players who haven't stayed healthy for an entire season. Shohei gets to play in the field, but like something has gone wrong with Shohei's body every year he's been in the bigs. So, and look, I don't know his injury history back in Japan. Can't speak to it. I'm just saying, like, sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's just pitching, and pitching doesn't affect, but like, and it'd be pretty rare to have an injury that would keep you from being a position player, but not a pitcher. So like, it'd be weird if he's like, I only pitch this year now. That's probably not going to happen. So like, if he's hurt, it's like hurt across the board. It's a long shot, but hey, look, long shot bets are for a reason. And the argument for India is obvious. You have Salvador Perez, Vinny Pasquantino, and Bobby Wood Jr., who were 100 RBI guys last year. I know Vinny, I'm rounding up for his sake because he would have been had he been in there. And I heard Ryan Lefevre on the drive yesterday, who will join us out from Gate D tomorrow, point out the thing about Vinny that is very true. There are hitters who understand how to drive in a run. He was making the comparison to MJ Melendez, which was somebody else's bold take, by the way, that said he was going to be DFA'd by the middle of summer. Is that he had, you know, like he had just as many, like they had a similar number of home runs. He drove in half as many runs as Vinny. So like MJ Melendez, this stat was nuts to me yesterday from Ryan Lefevre. MJ Melendez drove in 12 runs last year that were not home runs. You got to be better at getting RBI than that.
Right. Can't just be about trying to hit the ball over the
fence. And that's like the argument for India is that Vinny will get you home. He gets on base, Vinny will get you home.
A few other ones from the text line. Someone says bold take. Now this is, again, bold takes can be positive and they could be negative. This one a little more on the negative side from the 6-2-0 says bold take as they take a step back. The texter says rotation will not be tops in the league. Lineup outside of Bobby will regress. 78-84 missed the playoffs. That's on the other hand. On the other side of the bold takes, someone else says last team to be shut out this year. Royals are 24-1 that they will be the last team to be shut out.
Ooh,
that's a bet you can do. It's a fun bet you can do. Yes.
So yeah, I just
no like, shutouts in the first month of the season. What's crazy.
If you had said Bobby MVP last year, I actually feel like that would have been a pretty bold take. You say it this year, I'm like, that's a pretty medium take.
He's the favorite.
I don't know bolds. That's like regular Chex Mix, not the bold and zesty or whatever, right? You're not.
Yeah.
Like, crazy enough, it's just not that big of a stance again because it does appear like he's going to do that. Not saying you can't say that that's your biggest one. Maybe you don't have any other bold ones.
Yeah, there's some other ones that are, I think are predictions more than they are bold ones. Someone says Salvi will get to 300 home runs this year. That's only 27 home runs. So, I mean, that's not that crazy to think Salvador Perez can hit 27 home runs here in 2025.
No, but like he does have years where he hits less than that. And he has years that he hits more. So, okay. I think they were just putting around the idea that he gets to the 300 number, which is a big one for Hall of Fame stuff.
This one's very bold from the 816 says, Michael Garcia will lead the American League in stolen bases. He finished third last year. I worry about the playing time aspect of that. I would worry about that, but that is bold. That is a bold one. He didn't have enough last year. And then now playing time could be in question. I think it'd be really tough to get to the AL lead in stolen bases.
From the 816, MJ has over 1,400 at-bats. Tired of the apologists, but the Royals are too loyal sometimes. Had over. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's not a prediction. He's just responding to you.
I was like, hey, I have 1,400. Yeah, no. I told you yesterday we did the, like, pick your poison. Who do you think has the biggest season? That's why you're not surprised to find out my bold take is Michael Massey. But, like, I don't think it's crazy to think that the Royals, like what my secondary bold take, you have Estevez in there. My secondary bold take is that the Royals have a top five bullpen in Major League Baseball team of the year. Like that's, I think that that is a realistic thing that very well could happen. That would go right in line with your thing. But if I start looking at the arms that they possess inside that bullpen, that's not a crazy way to think about the Royals this year. And that could really be something that guides them.
We'll revisit these later in the show and obviously throughout the season. We'll ask Fern tomorrow to see, ask his bold take and also if he agrees with any of these. But again, you said Michael Massey, 25 home runs, going to play mostly second base. I said Carlos Estevez, career high in saves, going to be an all-star. Drew says Q wins manager of the year. Let's pivot to the Chiefs briefly. We know Patrick Mahomes, as we've talked about this offense and where it's been since 2019, certain areas have declined offensively. A variety of reasons for that, despite winning rings along the way. Earlier in the week, we had the discussion about the Detroit Lions and are there personnel things you can emulate from them, right? And the folks over at an analytical site that's fairly new. It's called Field Vision, and actually some interesting data through the season, and they do some betting stuff as well, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, they just did a stat on Travis Kelce, too, that was pretty damning. Like, he should stop running hitches.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, some of the data. So since 2019, Patrick Mahomes' deep ball has declined, they said. The numbers are way uglier than anyone realized. They go on to say the deep ball accuracy fell from 51% in 2019. He was number one in the NFL. To now 21%, which is dead last in the league. Now, I will disagree with this sentence because I was like, okay, come on now. It says, why his arm could end the Chiefs dynasty unless they fix this one brutal problem. Look, the deep pass needs to be more established again in this offense.
It didn't hold them back from getting to a Super Bowl and winning 17 games.
Patrick Mahomes' arm is not going to be why the dynasty ends, okay? Let me just put that out there before we continue.
I'm going to rank that as the least likely reason the dynasty ends for the Kansas City Chiefs, as a matter of fact.
Some of the data is interesting. We've discussed last year even at times, like, hey, where is the deep ball? We saw it all in training camp. We were up in St. Joe. It was there. Now, Hollywood Brown got hurt, and Xavier Worthy eventually, as the season went on, got better and better, but Rashee Rice got hurt. So a lot of this changed because of personnel. But in 2019, Mahomes, 50.9% completion rate, good for first in the league, 13 touchdowns, two picks. In 2023 is when this all slipped. Now, maybe we can correlate some of the O-line issues and personnel changes, but 2023, 31% completion rate all of a sudden on deep throws, only one touchdown, five picks. In 2024, 21.4% completion rate on 42 attempts,
worse.
Three touchdowns, four interception. If you're wondering who leads the league, ironically, in this, that's Russell Wilson, who now is a member of the New York Giants. He goes on to say in their article that defensive schemes evolved. We've talked about this since 2021. Teams are playing more of the two high safety look. Mahomes forced into some shorter throws from 2023 and 24, career low, 6.3 yard average depth of target. So I guess the question is, okay, do you believe this can be fixed? How much is this the wide receiver room? How much of this is the offensive line room? Or do we just think Patrick Mahomes now is just going to struggle when it comes to deep balls the rest of his career?
Yeah, I don't think, you know what I think this is? I think this is a volume problem. You think it's a what?
I think it's an O-line problem.
I think it might be both. The truth is you and I know. Mm-hmm. What do I think? He was the league's most accurate deep ball passer, and now he just can't do it anymore. And I'll admit, when he throws the deep ball, it's off. It's way off. I think some of that comes from what you're saying. The offensive line is making him feel rushed, and I think some of it is reps. I know that you can be like, well, he's thrown a million passes a gajillion times in his NFL career. He throws them all the time in training camp. How can he do it? You get in the regular season, and you throw six of them, one for five with a pick. That's not a good enough sample size to be like he stinks at deep balls. He doesn't throw them. The sample size to be bad at it is up because of the number of them he throws. Given the chance to go back to the volume deep passing game that they used to be, I don't think he's just lost the skill to throw the deep ball. I think they have lost the skill to run that in their offense, partially because of the way that they were playing offensively. From a scheme perspective, some of it because of wide receiver talent and some for what you mentioned in the offensive line. I don't think that he does not possess that skill. I think that this is a scheme problem, not a Patrick Mahomes problem. And yeah, that goes back to largely the thing we've been saying for a couple of months now, or a huge chunk of last year, which is they are not an explosive enough offense and they have not figured out a way to take advantage of defenses the way other teams do. And does that start with the offensive line? Probably. But I think he's a league average deep ball thrower. 2019, sorry, is the anomaly. But 2025 is the anomaly too, even though it's heading in the wrong direction. I think historically, he'll probably end up being a pretty average deep ball thrower. Not the best in the league, but he doesn't have to be based on the way they run their offense, Gold.
Isn't this something that we'll learn, I think, a little bit more for this year?
If the offensive line's good, if more stinks, then maybe not.
Well, because you said he was dead last, correct, Gold? I mean, there were offensive lines that were significantly worse than the Chiefs, and Mahomes was still dead last. So I think that that's where you can say it's the offensive line, but I think the wide receiver talent might be more of the issue, as well as just Mahomes not being able to throw. But I think this year with Xavier Worthy and then Hollywood Brown, assuming that they stay healthy and Rashee Rice, whether he's suspended or not, stays healthy, this is the year where I think we'll really was last year during training camp just talk and it just looked good in training camp and you never really planned on it happening, or is it your personnel changed. You had to divert away from the game plan of throwing the deep ball more. Where if Xavier Worthy is healthy and Hollywood is healthy and Rasheed stays healthy, do we see an uptick from five or whatever the number was last year?
Yeah, my guess is yes.
In terms of the volume.
Right. I think this is
what I hope so.
When Cody was saying, you know, I think it is a comment. It's not just offensive line, but it probably is O-line
sure.
time and the receiver room. And how many times for the last couple of seasons have we discussed which receivers can actually track the football down the field? And if we are going to agree that maybe Mahomes is not the best deep ball thrower in the league, and the numbers say he's not, well, then you might need someone that tracks the ball, has better field awareness. Much of the, what, for a month and a half, how many times did we bring up Xavier Worthy struggled to have field awareness? That was not a problem that they had in 2022 with Tyreek Hill or whatever. Mecole Hardman, throughout his career, struggled to track the ball down the field.
MVS.
So this is where hopefully Xavier Worthy improves in that area as well. I'm not saying that Mahomes doesn't deserve some of the blame. He obviously does. But it's a combination of both. You know, if you're not going to have a quarterback that's his biggest asset that he has, well, then you need maybe some receivers that are able to track the ball better to make up for that. And they haven't had that recently. Nope. We're going to find that out this year.
No, but I thought Worthy showed deep ball some good skills there.
What's that?
Over 20 yards, I think.
It's 20,
right?
It's 20
or 25. It's something like that.
Okay.
That's a good question for this particular.
Because to me, I think a lot of people, it's easy if you hear deep ball to think of like 30, 40 plus. Like he's taking a shot, but it doesn't. 20 yards isn't necessarily a shot, in my opinion.
I believe here's the graph. I'm sorry. On 20 yards or more downfield is how they categorize this in particular.
I think a lot of
and he was worlds ahead of everybody in 2019. Like the graph is hilarious. Mahomes is way off to the right in 2019.
Yeah, that's an anomaly year. It's the dot on the other.
If you're wondering, I'd have to look now for who do you think was the worst that year in 2019, or one of the worst. Josh Allen, by the way. So it's just kind of funny how things have shifted.
And now people think of Josh Allen as being it. Just some of this is talent.
He has gotten a lot better at the. I'm not going to say effort and just throw it, because 2019, I bet you, was a lot of the effort. Somebody's down there, double team. It doesn't matter. I'm chucking it deep for Josh Allen. I think it is a scheme thing, though.
Brock Purdy was the leader in 2023, and Mahomes was toward it. Bryce Young was the worst in 2023. And then you go to last year, the best was Russell Wilson and Sam Darnold. Mahomes was viewed as the worst.
Moonball guy.
Yeah.
You know? I think it was a scheme thing, too, just based on, like, it was personnel. It was also just scheme because, I mean, again, I know that the offensive coordinator problem or question mark always comes up, and it has with the text line and everything, but Matt Nagy might just develop the game plan a little bit differently than the way that Bieniemy did, along with the fact that defenses are playing things different. I mean, you mentioned 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Bieniemy was the guy at that point. Things have changed in the last couple of years. Who's been the guy the last couple of years? It's been Matt Nagy.
Yeah, but they also had Tyreek. Like, we just pretend they're not working with the same deep level threat. You know?
And they still had Eric Fisher in 2019, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mitchell Schwartz.
Yeah.
They had a great tackle situation in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I just think that it's a lot of different things. I think the scheme plays a lot into it of whether it's offensive line or not. It also is Travis Kelce is not running down the field as much. He's the reliable weapon and always has been. He's going to run those hitch routes and do the little twirl spin and still get you an extra couple yards in the yak. Rashee Rice, shorter yardage situation, possession type of receiver. They got Xavier Worthy, and we saw in the Super Bowl what it could be this year and further on.
Perhaps they could improve on it via the draft here in about 10 minutes. We're going to be joined by Daniel Harms. He's an analyst for the Draft Network. We'll get his perspective on his latest mock draft. How realistic is a tackle or a guard even in the first round? We'll get that answer in just a bit. But nationally across the NFL yesterday, national news was around the New York Giants, who brought in another veteran quarterback and their starter, presumably now, Russell Wilson. You guys saw that on a one-year deal, over $10 million guaranteed, could be up to $20 million. Russell Wilson, a few days after they brought in Jameis Winston. So Jameis is the number two. Russ is the number one. There's a major trickle-down effect that everybody's trying to figure out. I think we are trying to figure out as well.
Yeah, like, do they not think they're getting Shadur? Do they not want Shadur?
Is it that they are not taking Sanders at three? Is it that they think the Browns are taking Sanders at two? Is it that, no, they're still going to take Sanders, which is what they should do, by the way. Take Sanders at three and have the weirdest quarterback room in the NFL of Sanders, Winston, and Russell Wilson. That would be something. And Wilson and Winston, are only on one-year deals, so they're not long-term options. But if I were a Giants fan, I would just be so depressed right now. Like, this, what? Wait, not only do we not fire our head coach and GM, now we're just going to roll out Russell Wilson. So we're going to win like seven or eight games this year with Russ. And we should just, what are you doing if you're the Giants? What a mess. Or they're going to do what Drew wants, or not wants, but is suggested.
Yeah.
They're going to, what, draft Jackson Dart in the second or third round now?
I will say, from just an entertainment standpoint, I pray for Shadur, Jameis Winston, and Russell Wilson to be in a quarterback room office together. Because, please, I'm begging for that dynamic to exist. Are the Steelers going to start Mason Rudolph?
They better hope Rodgers doesn't retire.
Did you see the most recent Rodgers rumor? Is that what he's actually waiting out is hoping that the 49ers will just give up on Brock Purdy this offseason. Stop trying to get to better teams. They don't want you.
Yeah.
You can either... Yeah. The better teams don't want him, Drew. They don't want the headache. You can either go to the Pittsburgh Steelers or your ass can retire.
But they
stop
they
trying to get yourself to the Vikings, Cody, or get him to fire Brock Purdy.
But they're in a spot now where... If Rodgers just decides after an ayahuasca trip, I'm done, I don't want to play football anymore, the Steelers are screwed. It's Mason Rudolph.
Carson Wentz.
It's
a Carson Wentz-Mason Rudolph battle.
Yeah, have fun with that. That's exciting.
Isn't that something?
They'll win nine games.
The Steelers needing that. They need to have a bad season.
Right, but Mike Tomlin, I bet you, still gets Mason Rudolph to 7-9 wins. You know,
I didn't think Russ was going to get a job, so kudos to him. He found enough interested parties. Payday. I thought when Jameis Winston got the job in New York, and it was clear the Steelers, at best, Russ was their backup plan. I didn't think he was going to get a job if Aaron Rodgers took one. And he found the Giants starting job, even over Jameis. I was genuinely kind of impressed that he was able to do it. He's coming off a mediocre year. It wasn't like he was miserably bad. Mediocre quarterback play, some teams will take. I just, I don't know what the Giants are doing unless they're like, let's just lose. And let's hope Arch Manning is our pick at one overall next year.
That's what a lot of teams are hoping for. Yeah.
That's
the thing,
though,
that's crazy is that we don't even know how good Arch Manning actually is because the man hasn't played.
Correct. We're going to find out.
We have actually, there is a better idea. You knew who Trevor Lawrence was even before Trevor Lawrence, at least. Arch, you have absolutely no single solitary idea how good he is at all.
Yep.
You have a better idea on how good Drew Aller is.
Ugh. Yeah.
Which, again, you might think it's not that great.
Not good is the answer on Drew Aller.
Wait, is he a first-round project?
Drew Aller, Cade Klubnick, maybe Avery Johnson, and then Arch Manning are probably
the
top four going
into it. Just as bad next year is what you're saying.
I mean, we don't know that.
That doesn't sound way better than this year.
Cade Klubnick, I would say, is better than Jackson Dart.
I haven't heard of him.
He's a Clemson quarterback.
He was very, very, very good in the last back half of the season. He was maybe the best quarterback. He was one of the best quarterbacks in college football last year.
He's got an auto-generated name at quarterback for a 90s movie.
That sounds
almost
like somebody when you're in the fifth season of your dynasty in NCAA 25 is generated.
Cade Klubnick.
That's an AI-generated quarterback
That's
name.
That's true. Yeah.
You guys could really fool me if you started talking with somebody like, oh, yeah? That's the guy. You could almost get a prospect past me where I'd be like, okay. Is that a real person?
Maybe randomly in the next month or so, Drew and I will have to drop some name and just roll with it and see if you think it's a real name or not. You know, we'll just have to drop that in.
You can probably get me. I mean, now I'm kind of a little more in draft mode. I'm paying attention to the players, but especially very much so in the middle of a football
season. It's not just
season.
The players, it's where they went to college at. I mean, that could turn into a whole bit.
Oh, no, I already can't do the colleges. I'm done.
We found that out with Bo Nix in Oregon a couple years ago.
Your guy, Derek Harmon. Where did he go to college?
Oregon, only because he's my guy now.
He knows that.
He's my guy now. That's different.
Okay.
I'm working on my running back list. I want to settle one name I'm praying for, you know?
Yeah, there's a good running back, too. Brian Stevenson. He's really good.
Don't say random names like that. That's not a name I've heard.
Played in the SEC for a couple of years.
No. Yeah.
All right, up next, though, someone that does know just about every name that could be drafted in about a month or so in Green Bay, Daniel Harms. He's an analyst for the Draft Network. He joins us next. Back here on Cody and Gold, we'll get back into some of the stadium conversations, the latest from Mayor Quinn and Lucas, but we want to talk some draft. We've been having some fun with the mock draft sounders, looking around how some of the industry experts are viewing potentially who the Chiefs could take at pick 31, and we go out to the hotline and welcome in one of those draft analysts from the Draft Network, Daniel Harms, kind enough to give us some time here on Cody and Gold. I wanted to start, Daniel, because we're starting to sense a little bit more of a theme, but we're trying to figure out how the mock draft world is viewing it versus maybe even how we're looking at it, which is offensive line first round. How realistic is that still, knowing the Chiefs addressed the left tackle spot with Jalen Moore, and we think Kingsley Suamataia could be the left guard?
Yeah, so when you look at Jalen Moore, I think he might be a better fit in the future at right tackle, maybe replacing Juwan Taylor. So I think left tackle still makes a lot of sense for the Chiefs if a player were to fall into the 30s. Maybe they could want to trade up into the 20 area. But I think over as like an overarching concept with the 27-year-old tackle who was predominantly a backup for the 49ers coming off of, you know, the four or five starts that he had this past year, that's hope. Hoping he's going to improve, hoping he's going to be able to get better. But he still has those 4 years that he hasn't been able to start and play and develop in the league. So I think the future left tackle stuff still raises a concern, considering you don't know if he's going to be around and if he's even going to get better at left tackle. And that's the part where you're really trying to make that consideration. So I actually just got done doing a film review of Josh Simmons for RGRfootball.com, where I cover the Chiefs as well. So like he's still in play there, in my opinion. So I'm excited to see what happens.
So you think if they were to go O-line though, it would be a tackle, not a guard? Because we've seen some guards mocked, and that one just honestly doesn't make as much sense to us.
Not at all. I saw one with Tyler Booker. Not only does Tyler Booker a guard doesn't make sense, he's not a Chiefs guard. Like he's a pure power guard. Like he's not going to come in to be this athletic guy where you want to pull him and move him and things like that, where Andy Reid wants to, and that's not going to be his game. So I think tackle is probably the only offensive line option for the Chiefs in the first round.
If you think tackle's realistic, I love a varied opinion. Matt Miller had come on the show a couple weeks ago. He said of the five tackles who could go in the first round, three might end up being a guard. Or like in Mimbo's case, he's going to be a right tackle and he's going to be taken so high it doesn't matter. But like how many of the tackles that could be in that range for the Chiefs, 20 to 30, do you actually think will stay at tackle versus they're taking the same risk as they are as more? As in, they might not end up being a tackle and this all could be for naught and they might land at guard anyway.
Yeah, I think that there's two. The aforementioned Josh Simmons, I think, is going to play tackle in the league. And then Arianti Arisu out of Minnesota. He has 3 years of starting experience. I know I'm not entirely sure why he's getting projected elsewhere. You might have some soft shoulder concerns with him, but we see that being a little bit more functional, just trying to get back to your spot a little bit better and having the requisite athleticism to make sure you can cover that B gap. And I think that he has all those things. So those are the two players that I've kind of seen not only falling down draft boards, but in the area where you have opinions on Arianti that he's a second rounder. I have a first round grade on him in terms of for this draft that would take him anywhere in the 25 to 30 range. And Josh Simmons probably would have been a top 10 pick had he not got hurt. And now we're seeing some things come up about character concerns, off field stuff that just kind of seem to be coming up out of draft season, draft talk like we always hear. So that's something we're obviously not privy to in the team would have to do their work, but those are the two guys that I have on my board that still make sense for the Chiefs at the tackle that would probably be in that range.
You cover the Chiefs for RGR, so you know I'm going to ask this question. Are his arms long enough? You know that Andy Reid's really particular about that, man.
I mean, at the same time, Dylan Moore has 33-inch arms too. Like, they just gave him $20 million guaranteed, and he's got 33-inch arms. So Josh Simmons has 33. Arianti, I believe, is about 34, 33 and a half, something like that. So he has the requisite length in both of these guys. It's about how you use that length, right? And a lot of these players, if you have 33-inch arms and it's becoming a big problem for you, that's where you see the concern. It's, I think, a good player for the Chiefs at tackle, if they have a good grade on him. The 33-inch arms aren't going to mean as much as that you see like out of Kingsley, who's got to develop, but he has all the raw tools to be able to do it.
We're talking to Daniel Harms, analyst for the Draft Network here on Cody and Gold. All right, when the Chiefs brought back Kareem Hunt, I was a little nervous because I said, well, does this mean they're not going to draft a running back? What's your take on that, and is there an explosive back that comes to mind for you? Because we all watched this team a year ago. They got to find some more explosiveness at that position.
Absolutely. Really, if you look at this room in 2026, there's going to be nobody. There's nobody there. There's no running back they have on the roster that is currently contracted for the 2026 season. So they have to still draft one, bring in possibly two running backs that are rookies that are younger. It really depends on how they want to, you know, build the room. Do they want one guy that can handle everything? So you have a couple of options, or they want to build a room that has, you know, someone that's more of a pass catcher, third down back, but somebody else like DJ Giddens out of Kansas State, who I believe is going to be a fantastic first and second down running back, who just needs a lot of development as a pass catcher and a pass protector. So you bring in, I mean, maybe somebody like Rashad Smith. But both of these guys, the SMU running back, who has done a fantastic job in the pre-draft process, showcased, like, what, 19 touchdowns this year or this past year at SMU. Former wide receiver. He has, I think, a lot of the tools to become a third down back. Well, obviously, he's a fantastic pass catcher, explosive, and he's got really good running back feel. Giddens, on the other hand, one of the guys I just mentioned, is far better in terms of already developing some of the zone power concepts where he has the vision, the speed, and then he has the ability in space to string moves together, make guys miss. The problem is that he doesn't have very good pass protection skills and he doesn't catch the football as well as you'd like. But if they want to build the room in a way where you have one guy that can do everything, I think Quinshon Judkins out of Ohio State makes a lot of sense for them. You've got Devin Neal, who can also do all those things out of Kansas. So there's a couple of different ways that this class can really allow them to go about it. And if they're willing to spend a first-round pick or a second-round pick on one of these running backs, you have a total package in a guy like Caleb Johnson out of Iowa, Omarion Hampton out of UNC if he falls down the draft. So there's a lot of different ways they can go about this.
I always feel like I ask people who they like. Who do you hate? Well, you're like, all right, I don't want the Chiefs to take this guy. Like, I know people like him, but please don't do it.
I don't know if there's anybody that I've watched so far that I hate, but there's a couple of names like Jaquindon Jackson out of Arkansas, who's getting a little bit of buzz right now. He's power. He doesn't have the best vision. I like Cam Scadaboo. I do. I love what he does. I'm a little concerned about the athletic ability at the NFL level. I don't know if there's anybody that I've watched that I just like hate, but those are a couple of players that I would be a little underwhelmed if I saw the Chiefs draft them.
What about on the defensive line? We understand everyone continues to tell us it is an incredibly deep defensive line. I want to ask you a follow-up. Do you think it's deeper, like defensive tackle, at edge? Like, where can the Chiefs attack this draft if there are this many defensive linemen available?
They can do it at both, really. The defensive tackle class, I think in terms of the guys that have the well-rounded game, there's a little bit fewer, more first-round picks that you're going to see with some upside. Guys like Kenneth Grant that have the upside. He's a really good run defender. He has the length, the athleticism, but the pass rush skills are still developing. And then you get down into the day two, some of the day three guys, you start to spread out. Like, we see this all the time with the draft, where you have some pass rush specialists, then you have some guys that are really good run defenders. And then on the edge side, I think that this is so unique, where we're starting to see more players come up out of nowhere, where they're, Oluwafemi Oladeja was one of my favorite players
at UCLA.
it took me a lot of time, a lot of practice to be able to get there at this point. So he's one of my favorite defensive ends in this class, a former linebacker, and he played defensive end in high school. They asked him at UCLA to play linebacker, so he did that. And then this past year, two games in, they said, no, you're going to play defensive end, and you can see all the raw skills as a pass rusher. But honestly, he's got a much higher floor than I think people expected as a run defender, and what I expected. So you've got him, you've got some bigger body types, probably in the day two range, like Princely, Uman Mylan out of Ole Miss, his teammate, Jared Ivey. Like, there's so many different body types, skill sets. So this class itself, from both defensive tackle and defensive end, the Chiefs are going to find some players on day one, day two, even day three, that can really help the future of their defensive line.
We're talking to Daniel Harms from the Draft Network. Locally, we know there's a lot of Missouri Tiger fans keeping an eye on Luther Burden. There's a lot of Chiefs fans keeping an eye on Luther Burden. What's the latest with him? I mean, I feel like the stock keeps going down, and then is it an overreaction? Where do you actually believe Luther Burden is going to go, and is the fall warranted, if that's the case?
So I still think he's going to go in the first round. I believe in my last mock I had him going in the first round still. It's for me, when I watch him, it's hard to separate some of the schematic problems with the offense with the effort concerns that I had coming into the season for Luther Burden. Because there were still on tape times where he just doesn't run his route fully. He cuts it off early. He rounds his routes. They're not as sharp as you'd like to see. And then you can compound that with some of the offensive struggles they had this past year, where he's basically this glorified underneath threat with a couple of deep balls there every now and then. And it's hard to parse that through, a guy who doesn't play on the outside at all, and then you want him to do everything in the NFL. So I think the fall is a little bit warranted. Again, I was a little under on him coming into the season, and there wasn't a ton of development from the wide receiver side specifically that made me think he should be higher. But what you see right now is what you're going to get, and that's an immediate impact player with the ball in his hands at the NFL level. Like, he has already the spatial awareness, the physical tools after the catch down the field, the body control, ball tracking. So he's still going to be someone that can, in my opinion, goes in the first round based on pure talent alone. There's just a lot more refining to do with his wide receiver skill set that someone's going to have to either project or get in there and say, well, what's going on? What was going on with you at Missouri? Where is some of these effort concerns coming in on tape? So that's what was hard to parse out for me specifically, is trying to identify those different things. But the skills are all there, and that's why he's still going to go in the first round.
Big picture draft stuff. Just curiosity, what your thoughts are on Russell Wilson ending up a Giant. Do you think that they're out on No Shadur? No, I mean, I guess maybe Cam Ward's going to go one. So, like, are they out on that game?
It kind of feels like they might think that Shadur goes two to the Browns if you bring in two, you know, one-year deal contracts for quarterbacks and Jameis Winston and Russell Wilson. But I don't think it's going to prevent them from drafting Shadur if he's there at three. And I don't think it should. Like, there's no reason it should. If you love him as a team, and again, he's for both of these guys, Cam Ward and Shadur Sanders, they're like 1A and 1B for me. I don't care if you had one over the other. I have Shadur as the 1A just based off of his accuracy. And I think while he gets himself into trouble at times, a lot, he does have the skills to still manage the pocket. Maybe the arm strength isn't everything you want to see. But I think he's working on his release to get better at that. So if the Giants feel like he's still the quarterback that they want to draft and he's there at three, it wouldn't shock me at all if they still draft him. It does feel like they might think the Browns are in a situation where they actually could end up drafting Shadur, and they don't want to be without somebody that maybe can start for them.
That's just like a wild quarterback room. Jameis Winston, Russell Wilson, and Shadur Sanders. I guess just go ahead and make them Hard Knocks now.
Please, right? Give us. I want a camera on those three at all times. That would be gold.
Oh, it would be absolutely incredible. What's the chances though of them deciding not to take a quarterback, the Giants, and all of a sudden then they go and they trade back in the first round, or they wait till the second round, and somebody like Jackson Dart is actually who they go with?
I don't know if trading back makes sense for them. They probably draft Travis Hunter and then pair him. Again, at this high, I'm taking Travis Hunter and I'm playing him a wide receiver.
Trade back into the first round. Sorry, yeah, no, not trade back in the first. Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense.
I got you. So this Jackson Dart stuff, man. And I don't hate any prospect. I want them all to prove me wrong. I'm just not a Jackson Dart fan.
Fair.
I think that if you want to draft him, you should be there in the second round. But also, if he's gone in the first round, just draft like a Will Howard on day three or a Riley Leonard. I don't think there's a ton of physical tool difference between those three quarterbacks to say, well, we want to trade up to get Jackson Dart. And when you look at what Ole Miss does from a schematic perspective, they don't ask a lot of Jackson Dart. Now, I will say I was surprised with his physicality as a runner and his vision as a runner on tape. But when we watch him actually throw the football and go through reads, there's far too often where he's just waiting. He's waiting. And you can't wait in the NFL. The game speeds up. You can't get to your second read 5 seconds later or when the play finally breaks down and you move out of the pocket. You have to be able to go not just half read, full field read at times, but also get the ball out quickly, which we know Ole Miss does. They scheme all that stuff up as well. So I think that if the Giants traded up back into the first round for a Jackson Dart, that would be a little bit of a mistake on their part. But overall, these teams are going to do whatever they want to do. And I think that what we're seeing with, you know, Tyler Shuck and even, you know, Jackson Dart to an extent with getting these talks pre-draft are reminding me a lot of the draft with Malik Willis, who, again, he was going to the Lions, like, in the top 10 or what it was. The teams, I think, learn from that experience, and they're going to be like, okay, we'll probably evaluate these guys a little bit different, but if Dart goes in the first round, I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
Daniel Harms, analyst for the Draft Network. Great insight on the Chiefs and the draft as a whole. We're counting down to draft day there in Green Bay. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
You got it. So we started the convo there, asking about left tackle and the guards. And he's with us where guard makes no sense in the first round.
It doesn't to me.
But he did
I guess
say,
I'd be kind of surprised if they went that route.
But he did say, hey, they could take a tackle with the idea that tackle, Jalen Moore, ends up being a right tackle long term for this team after they move on from Juwan Taylor, and that they still need next year to have a left tackle.
They do still need long term left tackle answers.
Sure.
They have just this season on Juwan Taylor and just two seasons on Moore. And as you, again, we've discussed, 2-year deals in the NFL are 1-year deals. So they've really got 1 year on both, right? They got two contracts. They can go more again another year. But yeah, they don't have any long-term answers there. I wouldn't be stunned to find out it's a tackle in the first round. My bigger issue is that a lot of people think they're not going to be starting tackles. Now, he is now the second person because Drew said it. We've heard it in a different mock draft. And so maybe like three or four people now we've heard mentioned Simmons specifically as it relates to everyone seems to think he would have been a top 10 to 15 pick, but isn't because of two things, injury and character related issues. And so if those are the real things, then I don't know. Maybe we'll find a way to work around it.
I wanted to briefly touch on the stadium stuff, right?
We can get back to it later too. Sure.
Yeah. Because
always interesting.
Mayor Q last night was quoted by KSHB 41 around an offer he says the city has made to the Royals. And I'll just read a few snippets from this piece from 41. It said that the city, according to the mayor, has offered more than $1 billion to the Royals to help the team build a new downtown stadium or renovate Kauffman Stadium. Now, I don't know why maybe it's just a technicality. Renovate Kauffman's not an option. We know that. So, like, you could...
Yeah, they don't want that.
The only way that money gets used is for a downtown stadium, in Missouri at least, right? Like, quote from Mayor Quinn Lucas in this article. We do have, I think, a very robust offer that combines state and local incentives. It's my view that gets you to a $1.2 to $1.4 billion range with no tax increase. It doesn't calculate or include the current Jackson County sales tax. We know currently that expires in 2031. That's 0.3 cents on retail sales to fund the Truman Sports Complex. He went on to say it allows the Royals to either go downtown or stay at Kauffman Stadium. He says he has not heard back. And he doesn't know exactly when he hopes to hear back from the Royals, but he's expected to be at the opening day tomorrow. So a couple things with that. I think the timing of that is fairly obvious, and this is what's tricky about the whole situation. We all know the last 24, 48 hours and what's happened over at the 119th and Knoll site and in some of the reporting and everything around that, right? So then it's not a coincidence to me that, 8 hours later, the mayor of KC Mo says, oh, we actually have $1 billion package in front of the Royals. We haven't heard back. That's a little bizarre to me.
I think the Royals wouldn't want to know if you had $1 billion.
The other part that is, if it is true, that's interesting. The mayor is claiming that they have a $1.2 to $1.4 billion package that does not include the Jackson County sales tax.
I don't think they actually have $1 billion. All of it, across the board, right now, the sites, the money, it's all fake. And in the sense that, like, none of it is firm. That's what I'm figuring out here. None of the stuff that's been happening in the last 24, 48, 72 hours is firm. We're in this massive conjecture phase. What I'm trying to figure out about it is, does that mean we're close? Is it everybody is desperately lobbying their things back and forth with their other interest or different interests? Like, let's say the Royals are on one side and they want to make it think like they're going to Kansas so that Missouri steps up. Is Missouri where they're going to Kansas and Q wants to look good? And he's like, well, I offered $1 billion. It's not our fault that they left the city because he knows it's a stain on his legacy as mayor if both teams leave Kansas City, Missouri. And so, like, it feels like right now they don't have the same handle they used to have on what it is exactly the Royals are wanting to do here, which makes me actually think it's close. If the Royals are now close to maybe announcing their plans, they're going to keep this thing closer to the vest for the next 6 weeks. I don't know. I mean,
timeline keeps changing, man. At first, it was going to be December. Then it was by opening day. Now it sounds like maybe June or July. I mean, so
John Sherman speaks today at 1:50. We'll air that live right here on Cody and Gold. So maybe he'll give some nuggets in there based on the conversation.
The other part about at least last night from 41 and quoting the mayor is the dollar amount he mentions. That does not include state funds. That if it's presented, if that is accurate and how it's presented, and we know in February 25th, I think was the date, the mayor along with some Jackson County representatives went to Jefferson City and they touted this bill that they've put together that's going to allow them to rival the Kansas Star bonds and everything like this. That bill is not even in committee. It's been sitting for I think a month as of yesterday. It's just been sitting there. Now, the session doesn't end in Jefferson City till mid-May.
6 weeks or something.
Yeah, middle of May or so, and then they're on break. So, what has happened with that? That was our rivaling. So How has the city all of a sudden come up with $1 billion without using any state money? That's impressive if that's the case.
Honestly,
I would love to
know. No tax increase and you just got $1 billion?
It's pretty amazing.
I mean, we could have been fixing all kinds of stuff this whole time. Look, I think it's a lot of back and forth right now of people trying to figure out like, no, it's us that's the favorite. And they're trying to stay in the favor. If Mayor Q hasn't talked to the Royals, then the Royals aren't starting those conversations yet. And they're still in some level of exploratory. I don't know to what level that is, but they're at some level of the, we're not sure which direction we're going. Look, I hated the 119th site. So if that one dies, great. I didn't like it. I didn't like the site. Didn't mean the stadium couldn't be cool or I wouldn't go or any of the other stuff. I thought that location has never made sense and I don't want it to go there. I want downtown baseball, but I think there are better locations in the city that aren't downtown that could also work depending on it. But do I think that, like, if the Royals called Q today and they said, okay, we'll take the billion, do I think he has it in hand? No, I don't think that that's the case.
Someone says, can I make a sports bet in Missouri on where our teams... Can I place a sports bet in Missouri or know where our teams are first? What happens first? Well, sports betting is probably going to be up in October or November in Missouri. They better have an answer about the stadiums by then, I'll tell you that. My money would still be on the Royals Stadium, at least. I don't know about the Chiefs.
I'd have lost that bet a couple of times over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It was 1 year ago in like a week that the Royals lost. It was April 3rd of 2024 that the Royals and the Chiefs lost the vote.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a year, and they've yet to make any announcement about what their plan is after that plan failed. They've had 355 days or 57 days, and we're nowhere.
Anything that is out there publicly from any entity, Royals or Q, Mayor Q, that is, not Manager Q, or anybody, have to wonder
grain of salt.
You have to wonder, why is that being put out there? Like, why would somebody want that out there? And that's not being critical of anybody that's reported anything. I'm talking strictly about, why would somebody want that information out there? And you have to step back for a second and think, what would the motivation be for that to be out there? That's all I'm saying. Not about anybody that's doing any reporting, just why would the mayor have wanted last night for that to become public knowledge? Sit back and think, the timing of everything. It's okay to be curious, right? Like, it's okay to question things. And that's where I'm kind of at on this whole thing. But up next, let's get to the 11 o'clock hour. And let's talk a little bit more about this bullpen and how we would view a solid year or an excellent year for the Royals bullpen. And we'll talk briefly about the Sweet 16, including reseeding it a little bit and who's winning it next.